Chapter 7 The Bagthorpes scattered about the grounds, but were all within earshot when Mrs. Fosdyke screamed. Some of them, notably Mr. Bagthorpe and William, carried on their way regardless. The scream was a terrible one, but neither of them cared what was happening to Mrs. Fosdyke, nor bothered to pretend he did. For this callousness they were rewarded by coming back eventually to find lunch almost over, and Wong Fu curled up on a cushion by his owner. They had also missed a good scene. What had happened was that Wong Fu had entered the kitchen, trailing in his mouth the disinterred body of one of Daisy's corpses, the chicken, not the hamster. Judging by the mutilated state, Wong Fu had been hiding under a bush somewhere, chewing at it for some time, and was now bringing it in so that he could have another go at it later. It was not an appealing sight, and was, moreover, distinctly malodorous. Aunt Lucy, astonishingly, was not the least perturbed by this. "Darling Wong Fu is a hunter," she informed everybody. "How clever of him!" "He can't be a hunter," Rosie objected. "The chicken was already dead. To be a hunter, you have to kill things." They all scowled at her, but she appeared not to notice. "Wong Fu is a humane hunter," Aunt Lucy told her severely. "I will have no part in blood sports. What a curious breakfast menu you favor, Laura. I had rather expected kippers." "It is not breakfast time," Grandma told her. "It is luncheon. Do you have difficulty in telling the time?" "As I have already intimated, I do not recognize the existence of time," Aunt Lucy replied stiffly, "and will thank you not to refer to it. It may be listening." "Did you enjoy your stay with Claude and Penelope?" interrupted Mrs. Bagthorpe at this juncture. Grandma did not stand to benefit by Aunt Lucy's will, and was patently out to provoke her. This, however, could only put everyone else's bequests in jeopardy. "I did not," replied Aunt Lucy. "I thought them excessively tedious. I thought I should have died of boredom. Moreover, I have the strong impression that the only reason I was invited there was that they hoped to figure in my will." At this, something of a silence fell. The Bagthorpes studiously attended to their rhubarb dumplings. None of them wished to risk catching the old lady's eye. She was evidently a good deal more astute than anyone had given her credit for being. "They will, of course, be disappointed," she continued. "They will?" prompted Mrs. Bagthorpe, rather too hopefully to be in good taste. She thought that if Aunt Lucy then and there announced her intention of favoring Mr. Bagthorpe's branch of the family, he would be instantly reassured, and would drop his plan for survival as abruptly as he had taken it up. "Certainly they will," Great-Aunt Lucy told her. "Everyone with expectations in that direction will be disappointed. As there is no such thing as time, I shall outlive all these persons by decades, possibly by centuries." Nobody liked the sound of this, and Grandma least of all. Having only that day herself embarked on a scheme to ensure her own rejuvenation, she was much put out to find herself forestalled by a rival. She was casting swiftly about for a cutting rejoinder to Aunt Lucy's pronouncement, when Daisy offered her opinion of it. "Silly Griffin!" she exclaimed. This was an expression often used by Daisy, though nobody knew its source. Aunt Celia said it was a poetic metaphor.
A griffin is a sort of thing.
Aunt Lucy turned her attention toward the author of this remark, just as Mr. Bagthorpe, scarlet and breathless, appeared at the outer door. "Silly Griffin," repeated Daisy. "Everybody dies, don't they, Grandma Bag? And then there's funerals. Even Grandma Bag's going to die one day, and she's my favorite of anybody. And you're older than her, and you've got shorter legs, and you're more wrinkly. You're really creased up and wrinkly, so you'll die first." Everyone sat appalled by this apparent destruction at a single blow of their hopes. Mr. Bagthorpe clutched wordlessly at his hair. Grandma alone was undismayed. She was, indeed, enchanted. "When you do die," continued Daisy, helpfully, "just think, you might die while you're here. And if you do, I'll have a really nice funeral, if you like, and a lot of hymns and crying." Aunt Lucy looked far from taking up Daisy's offer, or at any rate voluntarily. She had really led far too sheltered an existence to fit her for survival in such a household as the Bagthorpes. Also, she was much used to being pandered to. The bees in her bonnet had always been kept slavishly supplied with nectar by those about her. Even Aunt Penelope had conceded that Aunt Lucy's theories about time might be given some credence. "A 1,000 ages in thy sight are but an evening gone, she had mused. It was years, then, since she had been thus confronted with the stark truth. Never, possibly, had she been presented with a truth as stark as this. The Bagthorpes waited with bated breath for her reaction. The younger ones were torn between desiring the short-term benefits of her upping and leaving on the spot, and the longer-term benefit of a sizable bequest. Aunt Lucy sat gasping for quite a long time. She and Wung Fu were breathing in much the same way, Jack noted with interest. In the end, Aunt Lucy disappointed nearly everyone by rising, still gasping, scooping Wung Fu under her arm, and making wordlessly for the door. "Oh, Lucy dear," protested Mrs. Bagthorpe feebly, undecided whether to make after her or let her go to her room alone and come to terms with the total disintegration of her world picture. "I suppose we must give her time," she murmured, not seeming aware of the irony of this remark. "How very touchy she is," remarked Grandma, hoping to trigger her son's repressed fury. "I thought Daisy's offer most handsome. What a sweet and generous nature she has." Her strategy was successful. Within seconds, Mr. Bagthorpe was yelling, Daisy bawling, and the entire company into a full-scale furor. At its height, Uncle Parker and Aunt Celia entered, having been unable to attract any attention by repeated ringing of the doorbell. Aunt Celia immediately hurried to Daisy and clasped her tightly, wailing. "Daisy, darling, why are you weeping?" She repeated this query twice more, as if it were a refrain. "Everybody's got to die. Everybody has," Daisy sobbed. "Of course they have, my darling," soothed her parent. "Never send to know for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee." "Hell's bells," yelled Mr. Bagthorpe. "Will you stop burbling about bells, for God's sake?" Most people there heartily wished that bells were tolling, in earnest, for Daisy. "Are you mad, Celia? That child has just pulled the kingpin from under every expectation I ever had. She has, at a stroke, reduced us all to eternal penury." He carried on yelling for some time in this vein, and talked a lot about lawsuits and making claims for loss of expectations. Much of this was inaudible, however, because of strong competition for the floor from most others present. Aunt Celia was screaming about gold and dross and corruption. Uncle Parker was warning Mr. Bagthorpe off his family. Grandma was talking about her will, Daisy bawling, and Mrs. Bagthorpe vainly trying to scream out advice from Stella Bright. It seemed as if it would all go on forever. "It was like the fall of the House of Usher," Mrs. Fosdyke later told her cronies in the Fiddler's Arms. "Only worse. The row they was making, it's a wonder it didn't bring the roof in. There's no wonder that cat was out of its wits with fright." The cat referred to, the putative Thomas II, was not, in fact, introduced until the furor had been raging for a full 10 minutes. No one had till then noticed that Uncle Parker was driving home some of his points by emphatic rappings on a large wicker basket, which could hardly have been reassuring to its occupant. It was Daisy, disengaging herself from her mother's protective embrace, whose eye first fell on it. "The pussy!" she shrieked delightedly, her mood undergoing an abrupt change. "That's the pussy!" Everyone stopped shouting at once, and all eyes now riveted on the basket. In the silence there was a faint mewing and scratching. Mr. Bagthorpe, his cup full, lurched off. His mouth was working, but nothing was coming out. A moment later, the door of his study banged. "Nasty Grook!" Daisy squealed after him. "Daddy, Mummy, get the pussy out!" The Bagthorpes watched numbly as Uncle Parker undid the catch. Daisy ran over and peered inside. "Oh, it's lovely!" she squeaked. "I want to give it to Grandma Bag." "Take care that it does not scratch or bite," Aunt Celia told her anxiously. The rest blanched. Daisy reached into the basket and scrabbled about before capturing its occupant. The kitten was bright ginger. Its dangling legs were tipped by claws, unsheathed and sharp. Its eyes were staring and wild. It was writhing frantically to escape Daisy's tight clutch.